You're listening to DottoTech, helping you get the most out of your technology wherever you use it, at home, at school, or at work. Brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. 20 years, the trusted voice of technology in Canada, Steve Dotto.
Welcome to DottoTech. I'm Steve Dotto. Glad you could join us today. Our show's dedicated to helping you get the most out of your technology, and we do have a great show lined up. Art Factora, how are you doing, sir?
Oh, come on. Wednesday? Is it sunny?
I
have been in the studio for hours now, and I don't have a window. And
well, you produce far more than just my show. You do what, the Food and Wine show here.
That's
and
tomorrow night do, at 6.
A new show coming on Friday nights?
Yes. It's been, I think this is week 3 now. It's
week 3?
All About Business show with all Shannon Pearson.
Oh, there we go. So lots of, you're kept busy.
Yes.
Not just doing your stand-up. You doing any stand-up soon?
At the first weekend of November, I will be at the Comedy Mix Comedy Club downtown. It's in the basement of the Century Plaza Hotel.
Yes. That used to be Yuck Yucks.
That's correct. It used to be Yuck Yucks. They switched ownership about a year ago.
Okay. Lots of good tech news happening this week. First of all, our poll went great, by the way. Our poll on do you use technology in the loo? We had a couple of, I don't know, 150, 160 people that registered whether or not they use technology in the loo.
Do you think they were voting from the toilet?
I think some people did.
Okay.
And about 30, we were slightly higher in the use of technology in the bathroom than the national average. The average DottoTech listener is more likely to be using technology in the toilet, about 34% or so.
It's because they're smart and they know that no time wasted. With these tabs?
The best was a comment that got posted that says, I don't use technology in the loo. I just go in there to do paperwork.
Oh.
You could use that. You could use that at the comedy thing.
Very clever.
Are you going to steal it?
No.
No.
We can't. I can't.
You know, lots of interesting news in the technology world this week. I think one of the most interesting stories, kind of flew under the radar for most people, is Shaw, you know, the cable giant, mm-hmm. Shaw. They've scrapped their plans to move ahead and build a cellular network. The thought was they bought what's called wireless spectrum a few years back. They spent $190 million or so to purchase basically a license to be able to build their cellular network, to buy the bandwidth. And so they were going to go head-to-head with Bell and with TELUS and with Rogers and build a cellular network to compete. They've decided not to do that.
Because?
It's so expensive to get into. As if $190 million just for the right to think about it wasn't enough. But they are moving ahead, and I'm going to be really interested in following this for the next little while. They've decided to actually, instead of doing that, build Wi-Fi access within cities. So kind of, if you think about using kind of campus-wide Wi-Fi networks, but extending them through larger regions, and instead of going head-to-head on the telephone service, instead going head-to-head on the data and try and build a Wi-Fi network.
Well, they have to hurry because on my road trip down to California about a month ago now, I was able to, and it was kind of convenient, but also being able to have a phone that connected to the internet back home, but on the road, obviously, I'm not going to turn on my tab. I'm not going to use international.
Oh yeah, the roaming rates are terrible.
We had a guest saying that he was gone for a week and he had a $13,000 bill when he got home or something like that.
Yeah, it's a little excessive.
Anyways, I knew that every McDonald's and every Starbucks has free Wi-Fi,
mm-hmm.
and I found out also that they don't seem to turn it off at night too. So even if it was closed, as long as you're within their parking lot, I could get online with my Samsung Galaxy. I could call home if I wanted to. I could check directions where we were if we got lost. So it was very convenient because there's pretty much a McDonald's or a Starbucks in every little podunk town up and down the West Coast.
Absolutely.
So it was ideal. But, you know, to be within a city and, you know, I don't know if Shaw's deciding if it's going to be free Wi-Fi or, you know, maybe they'll have banner ads to help supplement, or if it's going to be the $7 a day kind of thing. But It'd be great.
It's going to be. It is interesting. And you know, when you think about how much you use your different devices, I know that I use my phone now far more for internet access than I ever do for making phone calls. Mm. Texting is still there. Texting is going to be a big issue. Now, just out of curiosity, when you were making your calls, you were using Skype then on the
Skype-like app.
A Skype-like app.
Yeah.
Okay. Good stuff. Now, that was it. Oh, I should tell you what's coming up on the show. We got Mike Kozlowski coming on. Michael Kozlowski of goodyreader.com is going to be coming on. They've also got a new site launching about borrowing books. I'm kind of excited to hear how you borrow digital books.
Like an online e-library?
No, like an online swap meet, I think, where you lend me your book and I borrow a book back. It's a cool concept. E-books, though. Because some of them are licensed for that. We've also got Don Power. We're going to talk a little bit of social media stuff. I'm going to talk to him a little bit about Facebook advertising and that sort of stuff.
Is that his real name, Don Power?
Yeah, it is Don Power. And he's not a superhero.
Sounds like a superhero.
He sounds like he should be a superhero, but trust me, he's no superhero.
Oh.
He lives in Nanaimo. And superheroes don't come from Nanaimo. They come from Metropolis.
Yes. Gotham. Gotham City.
That would be the place. I also noticed that, you know, kind of following on the ebook theme, I'm going to have to ask Michael about this, but Starbucks is expanding its iTunes giveaway now to include books and TV shows and apps. Beyond, you know how when you go to Starbucks, you can get a little card mm-hmm. for music? It's expanding to apps. The other story that I wanted to just talk about a little bit in the news today is Google has released in the States their first online payment system called Google Wallet. And this is a really interesting battle about to be joined between Google and PayPal and I'm sure the credit card companies and everybody else who's interested in just taking all of our money, you know, kind of 1 cent at a time. The Google Wallet is a tool that will be uses a chip within your phone called NCF, I think. It's Near Field Communications. I might have gotten that acronym wrong. But what it is it's a chip that allows you to do communication at a very short distance. Mm-hmm. And it's using stuff like the bump technology where you type in a password. In this scenario, you would be buying your groceries. They ring up the bill. You type the password into your phone. You tap your phone against the terminal or against a device in the grocery store, and the funds are transferred automatically. Hmm. It's very cool technology. Near field communication. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. That is a battle that's about to be joined because Apple's talking about putting that in their phones, but they're not talking about putting the Google stuff in their phones. PayPal's talking about doing that kind of stuff, but they're not interested in doing it with Google. So now Google, not only at war with Microsoft and Apple and Yahoo and all those other people, is now going to be going head-to-head into battle against PayPal.
This is like the real-life Demolition Man.
It is. Well, there.
When are they going to do the retinal scan and the chip in the hand?
Soon? Oh, yeah. Yeah, RFID. Yeah, sure. Why shouldn't you have a chip in your hand? Or in the forehead.
Forehead.
There's lots of places. Yeah. The challenge for all of this stuff is going to be how long do we trust that this information is secure? You know, if you think about the fact that your phone could then transfer funds out of your bank account or out of your credit card that easily, I think it's going to – there's a large trust hurdle that these companies are going to have to overcome in order to get you and I, the consumer, to accept that this is secure.
It wasn't very long ago that the Sony had the issue with their gaming.
And also kind of flying under the radar the last couple of weeks, there's been a huge breach in the Netherlands where the people that create the security certificates over there were hacked. Some 500 security certificates were hacked, meaning that IP information could be stolen from people visiting websites, which were previously thought to be trusted websites. In this case, places like Amazon and Google were compromised. Now, it didn't make the press over here because it turned out that these people were targeting Iranian IP addresses, but some 300,000 Iranian IP addresses were compromised, and who knows what information was stolen. That was something that completely flew under the radar, but it's huge as far as the security world is concerned.
Yeah, instead of a bank robber knocking over one bank, they just knock over Google, knock over like 100,000 banks.
Oh, man. And how do you catch them? It's a challenge.
You look at the guy with the brand new necklace and rings.
Bling.
Six girlfriends.
With the bling.
That's the guy that you want to... Yeah, I think he broke into Google because I don't remember him having that stuff last week.
Yeah, well, there you go. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I think Michael Kozlowski is going to be joining us.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
It is time for App of the Week. Chris Miller joins me for our weekly challenge of the apps. Chris, What bring you into the conflict this time?
Once more into the breach, dear friends. I've got an app called Filmic Pro.
Filmic.
Filmic, I see. Pro. Subtitled The Filmmakers App.
F-I-L-M-I-C?
That's the way it is.
Filmic Pro, okay.
The Filmmakers App. It's $2.99. Great little app. What it essentially, it turns your phone into a quite powerful film camera. Now, it's already got the camera on it, so you essentially have the parts there. But what it has is you can auto-adjust all your exposure setting, and you can play a little bit with your depth of field, and you can have focus points that you can flip back and forth very, very quickly. So essentially, if you're trying to make a little home movie and you want to do some sort of cool moves and interesting different lens work, you can do it right from the app. And there's even a little function on it that has a slate where you can say, like, take one, and then you hit go, and it takes that image, places it in the beginning of the video file, and then records the rest.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
It makes me wish that I'd chosen a different one, because I actually have a teleprompter app that I was going to use for a future episode, which converts your iPad or your iPhone into a teleprompter.
You get a couple of kids with some iOS devices, they can put on a show.
Oh, they could put on, yeah, it would be awesome. But I don't have that at my fingertips, so we'll have to save that for another time. But check it out. Teleprompter's on. It's pretty cool. My app this week is probably the most expensive app I've ever recommended. It's anywhere between $9 and $14, depending what device it's for. It's called 1Password Pro. And it is a really efficient password manager, where you have one password. It stores all of your autofill information. It stores all of those sorts of things, so you can log onto your banking or onto the library or onto your, or even just into your device itself, or all of those sorts of things. And you don't have to remember 100 passwords. You only really have to remember one password, which is, and it creates really good encrypted passwords for you.
Now, this is a question that
I know
that some people may bring up, and it's always sort of running around my brain because I'm a little bit of a security guy. Making 100 passwords into one password, isn't that inherently less safe?
I don't know.
Okay.
The thing is that remembering all of that account, I mean, how is it different than really the keychain in the Apple OS?
I suppose it's exactly the same.
But keychain, I don't know about you, but I find that it only works sometimes for me, and I get confused in keychain.
Right.
Do you?
Well, it's not meant to have every answer, just most of the autofills. Like, it'll fill in your username, but you still have to put in your password, little things like that, because you shouldn't necessarily be just auto-logging in for everything for security
reasons. Fair enough. But even so, within Keychain, I often get lost. I often say, what is that, a password? Is it a website? And it's not clear. This makes it more user-friendly. So if you're comfortable with that concept, this is an app for you. But it's up to you to decide whether or not it is good. Because, yeah, once you have that one master password, how do you protect it downstream? But it really means that the device has to be stolen. And if they can hack that one password on your device, you're probably messed up anyways. And since it's for portable devices, you should have ways of turning it off.
Of course, yeah. I mean, you should already have your Find My iPhone or Find My iPad turned on, and then it should be no problem.
And you should just be able to wipe the information clean. Just wipe it clean.
Then all you've lost is an iPad, which is
That's
sad.
Right. Filmic Pro and 1Password are our apps of the week.
Good one.
We'll call it a draw.
All right.
Actually, maybe I'm going to give myself the point because I also had the teleprompter in the bag if I needed it. Yeah, point, Steve. Thank you.
App of the Week is brought to you by MacStation. Book a one-on-one training with our Apple specialists or sign up for one of our free workshops. Get the most out of your Mac with MacStation. Do you have a comment or question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Paperback Writer.
Michael Kozlowski has a very popular online site, goodereader.com, all about ebooks. Thanks for coming in, Michael.
Glad to be here.
You are now my de facto expert on all things ebook. How does that feel?
It's something that I've strived for
long, and you're proud. It's a fulfillment of a lifelong dream.
It's true.
Let's talk about Starbucks now. I pulled off the newswire that Starbucks is giving away ebooks and apps as well as those little song things. So what's the story there?
Okay, so I guess all this time people are used to going to your Starbucks and seeing that free song of the week. You go to iTunes, redeem the code. In the States, they're trying a new program now where they're giving away ebooks.
Now, this is just in the States?
Yes.
Okay.
They're more or less just trying it out in the States, and then if it's successful there, then they're going to push it off to more international markets.
But it's from what you're saying, it's not without controversy.
That goes without saying. It seems as though that their first book that they released is incurring much ire with customers.
Because?
They're giving away a book called The Night Circus, I believe.
Okay.
I may be wrong, but that's probably not the most important thing. The most important thing is it says that it's a free ebook.
Uh-huh.
When you read the ebook, it's about 400 pages, but when you get to page 370, it directs you to the iTunes store to purchase the book. And it does not say that it's a sample on the card. It says that it's a free ebook. And so a lot of people are expressing their disdain on Starbucks forums.
They're really
slamming it all over the internet.
Well, that used to be a very accepted practice, publishing the first chapter of a book at the end of a previous book in a magazine. Playboy for years would carry the first chapter of a new Kurt Vonnegut novel or something like that. So there would be, that creating a teaser to create interest in a novel. That's been done, but to get to nearly the end before you ask for money, that seems to me a little questionable.
It's true, and when most customers are saying is on the actual cards themselves, it doesn't say sample. It pretty well says a free ebook, and so everyone's expecting a free ebook. And so a lot of people are thinking it's the whole bait and switch type of thing. So for the first ebook that Starbucks is giving away in conjunction with Apple, it's not really off to a good start, to say the least.
No, I guess not. Let's go look. A couple of weeks ago was all the big churn and the big news in the tablet world with HP, of course, deciding to step out of the tablet market and out of the PC market as well. What was your take on that? How did things kind of fall on your side of the?
Well, obviously, the customers benefited.
Yeah.
$99 for a $499 tablet. People were all over it. Yeah, I mean,
and I was looking forward to having you on because I've got a friend who purchased the tablet and the HP. And now I had spent some time with it, and I thought it was a pretty good operating system. He really bought it because he wanted it as an ebook reader, which falls right into your sweet spot. He says that he can't find a good ebook reading client for it. And is that the case? Is there no apps for reading ebooks on the touchpad?
More or less. There is an official Amazon application, but it is in beta and it's really crash prone.
Yeah, he said the Kindle app, right?
Yeah.
And he says it doesn't work at all. Yeah.
Originally, it was U.S. only, mm-hmm. and then towards right before they lowered the price down to $99, they opened it up to Canada. It's unreadable, basically. Yeah. I tried doing a review on it, and it was crashing every few minutes, so I just gave up.
So what's your sense that people are – is there good – you think there will be apps coming out, or are people going to have to abandon WebOS? Because the option is, of course, to install a different operating system on the touchpads.
Yeah, there is a community effort with Android community to put Google Android Honeycomb on the HP touchpad.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been pretty well doing it for about the last month and a half. And about a few weeks ago, they got it booting up perfectly. But now they actually got the OS working and apps being able to be loaded on it. So it is a viable alternative, although it's not the easiest process for maybe a non-tech savvy user. It's not as easy as just putting in a file and clicking load.
It will take something to install an OS on a device without a keyboard, without a mouse, without all those things. It is going to take some technical clarity. But I guess there's also some news once we thought they were gone, they're gone as far as the touchpads, but that might not be the case. It looks like there might be another batch of them coming out.
Yeah, due to the demand, HP has manufactured an additional 200,000 to 300,000, and they're going to be available they've said on Twitter, and the main people in charge of talking to the public about mm-hmm. this have all said, between October 1st and October 31st, you're going to be able to see them at Best Buy. They're going to be some at Future Shop and available in more international markets, the UK, the US, and
now,
so on.
Was this a case of them using up their available parts? This isn't going to be an ongoing thing. There's not going to be another wave of them after
this. No, this is the last batch. This is pretty well, they had screens left over and all these sort of things. So they had it's their final swan song pretty well.
Okay, putting it all together. Lots of news coming out of Amazon. I guess in the tablet world, everybody's kind of waiting with bated breath for the other shoe to fall. You know, the iPad has risen to be the dominant product. Nobody else is really approaching it. But everybody's waiting and thinking that the Amazon tablet might be finally some serious competition for the iPad.
Yeah, it's Amazon's sort of adhering to their old philosophy with the tablet coming out sometime in October or early November, that they're going to take a loss on the hardware to make their money back selling ebooks, magazines, all of their content, their cloud platform, their Amazon app store. So it's sort of how they really got big to begin with, where they undercut everybody selling ebooks, that nobody could compete with them. And so before anybody could really catch up, they were the dominant power. So they're sort of adhering to their creed, where they will take a loss selling the hardware, which will benefit the end consumer. Mm-hmm. Everybody's saying that it'll be roughly about $250. So
really,
it's significantly lower cost than the iPad.
Yeah. So because the iPads are right now $500 to $700, I guess, is the kind of the going rate for the iPads. So they'll be half the price of the iPad.
Yeah. So undoubtedly, a lot of think tank and research firms have all said, like Forrester Research, iSupply, big name companies who do these sort of statistics for a living, say about 4 million will be sold by the end of the year.
Now, do you sense that some of the stuff that we've seen, some of the unique connectivity features that are in the Kindle with the WhisperNet and stuff like that, do you have a sense that that's going to be a part of this iPad part of the Amazon tablet framework?
Nobody really knows.
Really?
Nobody's, other than one tech blog who had 5 minutes with it, nobody knows really anything. And Amazon usually is really silent with the development of their products until they actually have something to show commercials for or to do official press releases for.
But we are starting to see the groundwork laid for the release of this product, and some fairly big news happened just recently on that front.
Yeah. For one, Amazon has created an Android app store that's been running for roughly about the last 6 months that's only available in the US. And what they have done just in the last 24 hours has opened it up to Canada, the UK, Europe, Australia, and a lot of other countries. And so this is in prelude to being able to have as many people in as many markets being able to download apps and install them right on your device.
Okay, so that's just been released into other countries, so that in Canada we can now go to the Amazon Android App Store and start to download apps now.
Right.
So you can do this on your Android phone or your Android tablet.
Yes, you can do that with either device. All you need is an Amazon registered account.
Okay, and that is a big step towards that. That had to be in place before the tablet was viable.
It's true, and it's USA only up until just in the last 24 hours, because they just wanted to have people work out all the bugs and everything on it.
Mm-hmm.
They also have done a lot of other content. They've made partnerships with different magazine companies to get single issues and subscription issues. They pretty well are doing a lot of things to amalgamate all their different services under one banner. They're even working on offering an ebook subscription service similar to Netflix. They're in talks with publishers right now. For an annual fee, you'll have access to X number of ebooks. So
that's good. Yeah, that's kind of along the line of what Audible does as far as the subscription service with the books.
It's true.
Good.
So they're trying to capitalize on that to try to get people as much content as possible.
Awesome. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you've started a new website. We're going to talk about lending ebooks.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or question for DottoTech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. DottoTech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Your single biggest investment in your life, for most of us, is our house. And making sure you have a mortgage that works for you is a really good thing to do. Now, just going to your bank, getting a mortgage, that's one way to do it, but I don't think it's the best way. The best way, get a mortgage broker. They work for you. And my mortgage broker, Billy Mack. Check him out at billymack.com. That's Billy Mack with an I. He will go check your mortgage situation, make sure you have the best possible rate, the best package for you, and basically it makes sure that your biggest single investment is a wise investment. You ready, Art? You ready to go get that mortgage?
No.
Okay. Not yet, but you will.
One day, fingers
one
crossed.
Day. One day, you've written down.
Lose it.
And where are you going to go?
Billy Mack. Billy there you and go. I.
Now, if you have time, drop by our website. If you're in the car going home now and you'd want to catch the rest of Michael's interview, you can download it and listen to us anytime online at the website. And we've got something else at the website. We always do contests. We like our contests. And Michael, you can help us out with a contest.
Yeah, we're going to be giving away an Amazon Kindle Wi-Fi. This is the latest third generation, ultra slim. It holds thousands of books. You can load your own in. Soon you can borrow them from the library, and you can listen to MP3 players, or MP3s, audiobooks. Yeah. You can do a lot with it. It's pretty well the de facto standard as far as international e-readers go.
And Art's eyes are getting big.
Because I can sign up for this one? No.
Well, I'll let Michael make the call. Can Art win?
No.
Yeah.
Consistency. You keep trying, Art. You keep failing. That's a terrible thing. Thanks for that. We'll put that up, and you'll be able to register at the website. Now, Michael, you've got, of course, Goody Reader is a popular site with all news about everything happening in the ebook world. But you started a whole new venture.
Yes, the new site is lendingebook.com, and the premise of it is it connects users up with each other that have the same taste in books to lend and borrow them with each other.
So basically, with the digital edition of books, with the ebooks that we purchase, some of them we have the rights to actually lend them to other people. We can always put them on multiple devices ourselves, so we can read it on our phone or on our Kindle or our Kobo. But this allows you to actually lend it to somebody else to read the book the way you would with a real paperback.
Yeah, Amazon and Barnes & Noble implemented a policy last year that allowed people to lend a book that is flagged lending enabled for up to 14 days. Before that, people would share the same email address to, you know, get the same access to books. And to discourage that, they allowed people to lend books. So you can lend it up to one time, up to a period of 14 days. And this site is really good because often with e-readers, you might be the only one in your own circle of friends that have one. Or if you have an Android tablet, you have an Amazon app, and you could read books and lend and borrow them with an app. So it's not exclusive to just e-readers. And so what we found is most of the times in circles of friends, you might be the only one with an e-reader. And even if you're not, you may not have the same taste in books. Mm-hmm. And so the premise of our site is to connect like-minded people up who have the same taste in books and allow them to lend and borrow books with each other.
Now, can you lend – is this a case where I just have to buy one book now for the rest of my life and then I can keep lending that one out to everybody else and then find other people who bought other books I want to read?
No, you can only lend the book out once and sometimes twice.
Oh, okay. So that's the limit. But it's still active on my reader regardless of how many times I've lent it?
Yes. Okay. So if you lend the book to me, you can't read it as long as I have the book, and I can only read it for about 14 days, which is usually enough for a voracious reader to finish a book, and then it bounces back to you, and then it's still yours forever.
It'd be nice if you could arrange it so that you only get the first 370 pages. That would be nasty. Now you have to buy. So what's this? So is it a free service at your site? How does your site itself work?
Okay, so it works on a credit-based system. So you pay 99 cents for 2 credits. Every new user gets a free credit. But what we do is we reward the people that are participating in the site and actually lending the book. So
okay.
If you are the type of person to have a lot of books, the more that you lend, the more that you can borrow.
Okay.
So we reward the people that lend, and the people that may not have a lot of books to lend, they can still borrow books.
So it costs me 99 cents for credit. Is it 1 credit to borrow a book?
Yes.
And how many credits do I get if I lend a book? 1?
Yes.
So if I have a library of 20 books, I'll be able to read 20 more books as long as I read them within 14
exactly.
days.
Exactly.
Now, do I do a deal directly, a relationship directly with some stranger who happens to have the second copy or a copy of a book I want to read, or do you broker that all? Do you actually and make sure? And is it a seamless thing, or do I have to actually communicate with an individual?
Nope, we handle everything. So the only thing that you really have to do is we redirect you to Amazon or Barnes & Noble, and all you have to do is just enter the email address of the person that wants to borrow your book, and it's just done automatically.
Oh, okay. So it's all managed still through their servers, through Barnes & Noble's and Amazon's.
Right. The actual sending of the book is done through them, but everything else is done through us.
Okay. And what about Canada's ebook reader? What about Kobo?
Well, we actually interviewed the CEO of Kobo, Michael Cervinius, at Book Expo America New York earlier on in the year, and he dropped the ball with us that said Kobo is going to be implementing lending books of Kobo books. Mm-hmm. And so this is really good on Kobo's part, because Barnes & Noble is more or less exclusively in the States. Amazon is Canada, the UK. You know, they don't really have the international pull that Kobo has.
Yeah.
Kobo has agreements almost in most European countries, North America, New Zealand, Australia. And so if once Kobo implements the lending-enabled feature of books, I think that that's really going to stimulate the industry, because Kobo is known as an internationally friendly e-reader.
So you'll be supporting that. How far out do you think that is? How long till we have Kobo?
They said that by the end of the year, we should see something.
Awesome. So the site is lendingbook.com?
Lendingebook.com.
Lendingebook.com. We will have a link to our site, and we hope our people can start borrowing and sending. And it's a brand new site. It's less than a week old.
It's true.
And hopefully we don't break it. So many people are going to come. Michael Kozlowski of goodereader.com, thanks so much. We're going to take a break on DottoTech.
MacTech, brought to you by MacStation, your Apple solutions experts.
Chris Miller from MacStation joins me from MacTech. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm very well, sir. How's yourself?
I am good. Chris, I want to revisit a theme which we've talked about, I think, in the past, but I think it's worth revisiting. Bearing in mind that we've been talking a lot about TVs in the last few weeks on the shows, with the conversion to digital, the fact that people can pick up now high def TV over the air so they can watch their Hockey Night in Canada from in true high def with just over the air signals. And I always keep coming back to Apple TV, and I still think that people don't know what Apple TV does.
No, people don't know. I'll completely agree with that. People come into the store every single day, look at the Apple TV, and are completely befuddled by it.
Yes.
Because it's kind of a new direction. You know, it's sort of like a group of people looking at tilted sails on a sailboat instead of straight yard arms. Just a totally different shift of method of media delivery.
Mm-hmm.
The Apple TV is, in essence, a receiver. It's a little hockey puck of a receiver. It's about the size of a hockey puck. And what it does is it takes media streams from various sources. The most primary, the one that it's designed to work with, is, of course, any computer in its Wi-Fi zone. Excuse me. Any computer in its Wi-Fi zone that has iTunes on it. So any media that's in your iTunes, be it pictures, movies, music, anything in there can be beamed directly to the device. Another cool real feature, any media on any iOS device. So it's iPod Touch, iPhone, iPad. Beam straight in. So if you're watching a YouTube video, you can hit the AirPlay button, boom, it's on the TV instead, which is really, it's very convenient. But the integration of Netflix is, I think, what really makes it just a sweet little device.
Because here's the issue with Apple TV is you have Apple TV, but you still probably need you still need a subscription somewhere because people don't want to buy a la carte all of their television. So with iTunes, if you want to watch an episode of 30 Rock, it costs you X dollars. Mm-hmm. If you want to watch an episode of this or that, it costs you money all the way. And even though it might not add up to as much money as you might spend on a Shaw subscription over a month, you don't want to think about every time you watch something paying. So that's an issue. So the iTunes side is an issue. Unless, I mean, it does work great as far as playing your own home videos and music videos that are trailers to albums that you've bought. That sort of stuff works absolutely great there. But for television consumption, I don't think people like being nickel and dimed. But you're mentioning Netflix, mm-hmm. and that changes it because now we have a subscription where as much media as I want to consume, I can consume.
$10 a month.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the amount of media that Netflix brings in is really sort of substantial. I mean, it wasn't that great a selection when it first debuted in Canada, but it's gotten a lot better. They've recently gotten pretty much the entire NFB Film Board collection, so you're getting a great amount of Canadian content and movies that I'm a film buff, and they're Canadian movies I haven't heard of that are on here, and I just love discovering them and finding them out And you know, you discover great movies that you'd never heard of because they were Canadian content, never made it outside of Ontario television, and now they're up there. Mm-hmm. And the odd thing is we're also getting a lot of the big-name TV shows even before the Americans are. For instance, we got Mad Men on Netflix 6 months before the Americans did, which was fun because who doesn't like Don Draper? Mm-hmm. But I would actually disagree with your earlier premise of people not liking, as you say, nickel and diming it. I know quite a few people who've actually completely canceled – any Shaw subscription they have or TV subscription, whatever you have, and they've done the math multiple times. Instead of paying your $70-$80 for your premium television subscription, they find that they're maybe spending $30 on movies and TV. And the nice part is you then only watch the TV you want to watch. Mm. You don't watch the junk.
And that is the shift. You were talking about a shift in using the technology. The shift is that then television doesn't become that rest time. Television is destination. You think about what you're going to watch. You don't just sit down and watch it as that mind-numbing experience that it quite often is after a busy day where you just say, you know, you happen to watch whatever's on and you just say, I wonder what's on because you just want to sit, kick back. That's, I think, what you lose. But you can probably recapture that with Netflix.
Well, actually, one might argue that I've heard a couple people – yeah, I mean, Netflix is good, but you still do have to make a conscious choice about what you're going to watch. You can't just turn on Channel 6 and let it watch
over you. You're not just going to surf, yeah.
There's actually a few things that I've been noticing around my circle of friends that when we want to watch a TV show, we sit down and we're like, okay, cool. We're going to go home and watch – we're going to watch three episodes of Battlestar.
Yeah.
And that's what we watch. And if we want something to wash over us, that's where we use podcasts. That's where essentially radio has come back. Because if it's just we're having a conversation or we want something in the background or we're reading a book, instead of leaving really, really poorly written sitcoms on that will just go for three seasons without any actual anything, have a couple cool podcasts for instance, Dottotech is an mm-hmm. example. And it's a complete change in the way of media consumption. Instead of, as you said, allowing it to just wash over you, you're actively searching out what you want, which makes you a little bit hungrier and makes you a little bit more particular. Because if you have to pay for it, like, for instance, as you said, if you have to pay $1.99 an episode, you better actually like the show.
Yes.
And if you only meet kind of like the show, you're not watching it.
Yeah. 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 And it also, that show had better impress you the first time you watch it.
Yeah.
it doesn't
pilot better be good.
Yeah, exactly. I'm in the middle of Parks and Rec right now.
Oh, yeah.
Thoroughly enjoying that. But the first few episodes, not so good. Mm-hmm. It wasn't really till Rob Lowe got on the cast.
Well, that's always
then it
true.
Took off. Yeah, it's true for pretty much every series because Rob Lowe seems to be fairly popular these days. So Apple TV is about $120. And
it'll change the way you watch TV?
It'll change the way, but it really, if you get it, Netflix.
Oh, get Netflix.
Get Netflix.
Oh, yeah.
It changes everything. If you want to check one out, I think Mac Station is the place you should go. Chris Miller will take you on a tour. Thanks, Chris.
See you there.
MacTech is brought to you by MacStation, your environmentally friendly solution. Trade up to the newest technology. Save taxes on the new machine. Give a second life to your old Mac. MacStation, who said business and pleasure don't mix? You're listening to Dottotech, brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.
Joining me online now from beautiful Nanaimo, British Columbia, social media consultant Don Power. How are you doing, Don?
I'm well, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. You just had some boot camps over there on Vancouver Island.
Yes, we did. In Nanaimo yesterday, we had a social media camp workshop where we gathered about 150 people from Nanaimo to get tips on how to use social media for business.
Oh, how did that go?
It was a fantastic event. We had people from just about every industry you can think of in Nanaimo, and we had four professionals in the field, myself included, talking about Twitter, Facebook, social media in general, and productivity on social media. So we were able to cover the gamut of social media.
You really did.
Yesterday.
You know, I wanted to talk a little bit with you. I noticed you've written a bit recently about doing Facebook advertising, and I'm fascinated by how much you can basically narrow down your audience with a product like Facebook as far as creating ads.
That's right.
Yeah.
The strength, of course, is just what you said about Facebook advertising. It allows you to target specifically the audience you want to reach. And Facebook determines that by the information that your users or the Facebook users fill out in their profile, the pages that they like, the pages that they talk about and comment on.
In posting,
It's all tracked. And it ends up being very useful for marketers who want to target their advertising, specifically for the people who are interested in the type of things that they provide.
And let's begin with the social side, and then we'll get to the business side in a moment. But a lot of people are really concerned about their privacy and how Facebook uses their information. And it's kind of a double-edged sword, because if you fill out your profile information on Facebook, if you are posting a bunch of information, it tells advertisers an awful lot about you, which allows them to target you for their advertising. Now, a lot of people say, well, wait a minute, I don't want people knowing that much about me. But personally, I would rather be seeing ads coming on my Facebook page for fly fishing products, because people know I like fly fishing. They know from what I post and what I do, as opposed to Viagra, for example, which I also get ads occasionally in my email box for, which I don't appreciate as much.
Right, right. Well, the issue of privacy on Facebook has been a big issue and continues to be an issue of great concern. Facebook has introduced just very recently a number of measures where you can define the people to whom you want your updates to be seen and read by. So that's you as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
They are incorporating additional measures of privacy so that your conversations, again, are relevant just to the people who you want them to be relevant to. Now, the interesting thing about advertising and should we expose ourselves to advertising, in general, these days, the majority of the social platforms that we engage in are free. And so they're actually, they have to be paid for some way. So in other words, you're going to be exposed to advertising one way or another on a lot of these free social media platforms, which we all like and use and get a lot of value from. So as you said, you're better off getting advertising that's at least targeted toward the things that you like and the people that you interact with, as opposed to random advertising that has nothing to do with you.
And this isn't a new thing. I mean, depending on what television show you watch, they pay very close attention to what the demographic of that show is. Now, it's going to be a wider net, but they're still targeting towards you.
Yes. The big distinction between television advertising or any traditional form of advertising, though, Steve, when you compare it to Facebook, is that Facebook advertising in general is interactive. In other words, you typically, for the best designed ads on Facebook, are ones where you can actually interact with a brand on Facebook, as opposed to just simply a static ad that gets you to try to buy a particular product. So the social element for the best ads is included in those ads, and that is the new thing. That's the new piece, that it has a social engine involved with the advertising as opposed to just a solicitation to get you to buy the products. At least that's the best advertising incorporates that social engine.
Yeah, let's talk about the anatomy of a Facebook ad for a moment. Now, all of the users out there who use Facebook, you'll recognize the ads there. They appear in the column on the side of the Facebook page.
That's right.
But when you start as a small business, and I'm especially thinking of micro businesses, you know, really local businesses. I don't know, the local dog trainer or restaurant or service that's right in your town of Nanaimo or Vancouver or Victoria.
That's right.
When you start to build your ad, the amount of control and the amount of and how much you can target who's going to see the ad is tremendous.
Yes, absolutely. you can define, I mean, one of the easiest criterion to sort of wrap your head around for an advertiser is geographic location.
Yes.
So Facebook can very much control the individual towns, mm-hmm. no matter what the size of where you want your ad to be seen. But probably a more powerful criterion for the person or the people, rather, you're going to focus your ad toward are what pages they've liked, what interests they've defined. And that information is actually part of the Facebook advertising interface. So it will allow you to select from the myriad likes and pages and interests that are out there, and you simply can actually pick them from a list. So Facebook makes it very easy for an advertiser or a small business, even a micro business, to select just the criteria that is important to them. And that could be the city that you live in, the fact that people have mentioned in their tweets or their Facebook updates that they like dogs,
yeah.
their likes and interests, pages that they frequent, and even comments from that person and to various pages can also be defined as someone's level of interest in the products that you serve and the advertisements that you end up serving them on their page. It's incredible.
And similar targeting, you don't then have to spend huge amounts of money to reach a broad spectrum of people, but you can spend a small amount of money to reach a very targeted group. And you can probably create a fairly effective Facebook campaign for as little as maybe $10 or $15 a day.
That's absolutely right. In fact, you could probably do it for less than $10 a day if you think about a month. You could design a pretty effective campaign, you know, if you're just starting out and you want to test the waters for probably as little as $150 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the beauty of Facebook is it allows you to determine how much you want to spend. And it's very precise in its ability to tell you how much your advertising will cost you. And it will never transcend that amount, your upper limit. In other words, you don't have to worry about your ad being super successful, and then Facebook charging you $50,000 for the ads.
Yeah.
You actually specify exactly how much money you have to spend and the thresholds that you want, and your advertising will be published within those parameters.
Within those parameters. You actually bid on the amount that you're going to be willing to pay per interaction. You were talking about the fact that these are interactive ads for the most part. By somebody
That's
clicking
right.
on your link and coming through, you can actually track that. So you can see the success rate that you're having. How many people coming to your page, how many people coming to your site, and then how much business you close as a result. So it's very trackable.
Yes, that is another wonderful feature about Facebook advertising. Unlike traditional advertising that we mentioned earlier, is that, yes, when you put out an ad on TV or in the newspaper, it unless you have a physical coupon or something that someone can bring to your location, it's hard to track who saw your ad and ultimately who's cashing in on it or who's redeeming it. Whereas Facebook, every last statistic about who clicks on it, what they did after they clicked on it, did they share that advertisement? Did they talk about the keywords in that ad to their friends or to their Facebook colleagues? All of that information is trackable to a granular level so that you can modify your advertising campaign accordingly.
And all of everything that we've said about Facebook can be translated into some of the other social sites. I'm thinking especially of LinkedIn. We have the exact same kind of capabilities within LinkedIn.
Yes, LinkedIn. I made notes earlier in anticipation of our call that LinkedIn advertising works virtually the same way. And because LinkedIn, of course, like Facebook, has a lot of data for every account that signs up there, again, you can be very granular in your approach to who sees your ads and just target them to the specific businesses or likes or interests of the LinkedIn users so that they just see your ads. So yes, you're quite right. It works very similar to Facebook, and its targeting is its key benefit.
Don Power is a blogger online. His site, donpower.com, has lots of blog posts. He explains this stuff very well, and it's a resource that I visit often. Thanks for spending some time with us today, Don.
Oh, my pleasure, Steve. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Dottotech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Do you have a comment or a question for Dottotech? Visit our website at dottotech.com and click on Contact Us. Dottotech is brought to you by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you. Now, back to Steve.
Joining me in studio now, Cedric Tetzel from London Drugs. How are you doing, Cedric?
I'm doing well. Thank you, Steve.
Good. There is a scam afoot. And so instead of talking about our normal hardware and software and all the fun stuff that we normally talk about, there's a scam that's come to your awareness. Tell me about it.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to be paranoid. It's good to be suspicious. And the way this scam works is I was hit by this same scam, so I can speak from personal experience. I have friends who've been hit by the same scam. And certainly we have a lot of customers hit by the same scam. The way it works is that you get a phone call at home or at the office. The caller would identify themselves as either from a big company, somebody like a Microsoft or a Symantec. And they'll tell you that it has come to their attention that your computer has been infected by a virus.
Really?
Yes. They will tell you that.
Wow.
What you should do is hang up.
Yeah.
Because rest assured, nobody from Microsoft, nobody from Symantec would ever call an individual user and tell them that their computer has been infected.
But we don't expect a computer scam over the phone the same way. I mean, we are learning to filter our email and all those sorts of things. So what's the payload? What do they try and do?
Well, what they're trying to talk you into is giving control of your computer over to them through the internet.
Oh, okay. Screen sharing and then
that sort management of thing. Okay. So what happens at that point? Number one, your data, your information on a computer is now open to them.
Mm-hmm.
Not a good idea.
Yeah.
Then what they've done is load viruses on the computer and then offer to fix it for you for, I've heard $200, I've heard $400, I've heard $500 over the phone to fix it for you for something that they had created in the first place.
So this is a spin on the old auto repair scam where they cause a problem before they fix it.
That's right. So unfortunately, they are very credible. I've tried to check into how widespread this was, and it turns out the earliest report of that I found in Australia. Then it hit the UK, and it finally arrived in North America earlier this year. And we have had dozens upon dozens of people coming into our stores because every one of our stores have a trained technician mm-hmm. on staff that look after the computers, they repair it and all that stuff. And we've had a fleet of customers coming in that's been victimized by the scam so that we have to clean up the virus for them.
They've gone on and installed. So you said that they've actually reached out to you. You've had a call from them.
Yes.
And so, as you say, credible? Did it fool you for a second?
Luckily, not me, because mm-hmm. I was born paranoid and suspicious. And I also know that people like software companies, like Microsoft, Symantec, or banks and credit card companies, they don't call you to ask you questions about your bank account, about your computer. They don't do that. You generally have to call them, or at least call them back if it's a security issue of your credit card, for instance. So people have to, I think it's healthy to be paranoid when it comes to that sort of thing. Where do you get an email from somebody who wants to know your bank account for some whatever reason, or a phone call, it's the same thing. Be suspicious, look around, and in many cases, you're probably not the first expected victim of this scam. So going into an internet search to search for, and this is what I did, is Microsoft phone scam, and sure enough, here were all these people telling me about Australians who've been victimized by it, by English, the people in the UK. So there was a whole history of this scam going around the world by some call center somewhere. The only thing we can tell is that they seem to be English speaking and they seem to be based in a foreign country.
Yeah.
But they've made the rounds.
So I think it's well worth revisiting. We haven't talked a lot about security on this show, but it's well worth revisiting some of the best security measures that people can take. Of course, having up-to-date antivirus software is always a good idea, but the best defense is yourself. And so, A, don't take phone calls. don't give some stranger access to your computer. But B, the prevalent email scams that we see out there all the time, the most common that I'm currently seeing in my inbox is the bank frauds where they say, this is the Bank of Montreal. Somebody's tried to access your account. Please log in and make sure that your account is okay. And then they give you a link. That link might look like the Bank of Montreal, but it's not the Bank of Montreal. So always enter your bank or your financial institution, your credit union, always enter their website by direct URL, by typing it directly into your address bar and navigate to it yourself. That's probably some of the best things that you can do. Don't open links in emails. Can you think of anything I've left off? Don't visit really bad porn sites, that's probably a bad idea.
Just have a healthy sense of awareness and skepticism and suspicion. It's the internet has a lot of people on the internet, and not all of them are good people.
Most of them aren't, I think, now. I think we've reached the point where over 50% of the people are bad people.
That's a little bit too paranoid, but...
I thought you said you were really paranoid, Cedric.
Yes, but 50% is a high number.
Yes,
but even a 10% can and create a lot of havoc.
And I was being a little bit facetious there, but yes, you've got to be aware, and now you have to extend that to everywhere else. The next one that we're going to be, we haven't heard too much about it yet, but at some point we're going to be on here talking about all of the different dangers we have with our mobile devices. Coming soon, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Cedric Tetzel from London Drugs. Be safe out there, people. It's a crazy world. Well, Art, that's all the time we have for this week's show. You know, there was one piece of news that I didn't get in off the top because I wasn't sure how I wanted to approach it, but I think it's worth having a conversation about.
Okay.
Are you following the PETA story?
No.
What's going on with PETA? You know, PETA are the people that don't like you eating animals or being mean to animals.
People for the ethical treatment
of animals. Yeah. And they've decided that they're going to use a new medium to promote their message. They've been doing kind of semi-erotic photography with nude people with animals
that
you can't see. Yeah, I thought you might. They're actually launching a soft core porn website.
Adult entertainment.
Adult entertainment. It's going to be up in December to help people understand to be kind to animals.
So now you're saying I have two things to look forward to in December, Christmas and this website?
Well, the thing is, I think they're going to be kind of creating a little bit. They want to also create some controversy. So they're going to be putting up other photos that they think are going to shock people, which is based on the treatment of animals. So there's going to be semi-nude or nude celebrities in tasteful nudes. They haven't approached either you nor myself to be in these photos.
We still have time. It's only September.
It's not going to happen.
Okay.
And they are going to then have these photos, and then they're also going to be setting these against other photos, which are a little more disturbing, which I think is going to mess with people.
Mm.
Yeah. So you're not so keen on it now, are you?
Oh, I'm keen with half of it.
You're keen with which half?
You know which half.
I do indeed know. So that's going to be, it's interesting, but because the porn sites are still
adult entertainment.
Is porn an inappropriate word?
Sounds dirty.
Well, it is. It's beauty's in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
Erotica.
Adult entertainment. They're going to be doing it. And PETA's putting up, nudie pictures along with animal pictures.
How do the animals feel about this, though?
I don't know. I don't know if they pay the animals that are in their photos. I don't know. There's going to be lots of vegan recipes, too, apparently.
Oh, great.
which is good news, because that's the first thing I want to do after looking at some softcore adult erotica is go
a nice quinoa salad.
Quinoa and bean salad. Exactly. That is all the time we have for this week's show. Reminder to you to drop into our website at dottotech.com. We're going to be giving away a Kindle. Oh, that's going to be a great prize. And, of course, we've got the podcast and lots of other information at our website. On behalf of Art Factor, I'm Steve Dotto. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next time right here on Dotto Tech.
Dotto Tech is brought to you in part by London Drugs. Nobody does it better, except maybe you.